everybody, and welcome to another interview for my blog, A Rich Comic Life. My name is Richard Gill, and today's guest is the wonderful Sean James, a Welsh comedian who runs Collywobble's Comedy Night, as well as Happy Monday's Comedy Online. Please welcome my guest, Sean James. Yes! Hello, Sean!
Hello,
mate. How are you?
Hang on, I'll just do my hair. There you go. Lower expectations. I've got a beer and crisps, and I've got CBD oil rubbed into my back. So,
well,
if it kicks in at any point, then this gig might go a bit tits off.
It's fine, my friend. It's fine, my friend. No problem at all.
Gig, so I'm not playing it for laughs. So,
no, yeah. No, I know.
Blue Monday is the worst fucking day of this world. Boris is going to tell us lockdown for the next 6 months.
Well, I tell you, the online comedy has kept me going through the last 9 months. I tell you that.
Yeah. I mean, but that's a lifesaver.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
A lot of people on both sides. Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, my friend, I've got a number of questions to ask you, and I'm fascinated with the answers. So, the first one is, how did you become a comedian?
That's a good one, mate. But yeah, well done.
It's a good start, isn't it?
Well, you know, it's a bit of an odd one. I mean, I don't know if I still am a comedian or whatever. I run comedy gigs, and I got sucked in into the running, a bit like, your man James and stuff. So, I'm not like you. You went to like your first comedy gig at the age of six or something crazy.
Seven,
like that, And I don't know, like from a little town in Wales, like I never knew that comedy was a thing. Like obviously on TV, like I loved comedy, watching all kinds of things similar to you, like the old classics my mum and dad watched, to, to the young ones, to like stuff that, Blackadder, that people like, not stand up per se. Like obviously I remember Ben Elton and Rick Mayall and those guys.
They were fantastic,
On TV, but as in a real going to a comedy club, like I never really did that until I moved to London in my 20s, but I was a late starter, mate, so I lost my comedy virginity although I did go and see Lenny Henry.
Wow, you won up on me, mate.
Yeah, when I was living in Sydney, and that was like an impulse thing. It was like at the State Theatre in Sydney, which is like, it's like their Albert Hall. It's like a lovely old Shepherd's Bush Empire, like a lovely old theatre. And that was when I was like a backpacker, and it was like $45. Back then, like it was like a dollar a beer, so that was 45 beers. So that was a lot of money. And I just heard him on the radio when I was like walking to work on my Walkman. It's that show my age. Remember Radio Walkman?
Yeah. And big time.
I was like $45. Oh fuck it, it's only money. So it was partly like nostalgia, homesickness.
That's brilliant.
I think I've been there, and I mean, my mate, we bought them literally the day before. It was almost sold out, but we got like row X in this theatre, like this grand old theatre. And I don't remember any of these jokes. I just remember me and my mate nudging each other, going Dudley. Like that's all I remember. Like, but that was my first experience of stand up. Although I did in Sydney, I did go to a poetry night. No, it was like a comedy with a poetry with a bit of comedy. And I remember thinking that was just like a free thing in a pub. It was like in this arty area of Sydney, and I was like, I remember like being blown away by that. But then, as in going to like a proper comedy club, I didn't go until I moved to London, like in the mid 90s, and I lived in Balham. I went to the, my flatmates who were Aussies, actually, randomly. But there's this really good comedy club down the road. Yeah, it was literally a 2 minutes walk away, the Banana Cabaret. We went there, and I was like, this is amazing. And like, and I used to go week in, week out, and then I'd sniff out comedy, I just got addicted to comedy. Like, it's a drug, isn't it, as you know?
It is, mate, yeah. It is. Once you're there, and you've got such a good venue as well, it's an old listed building, isn't it, the old
Banana Cabaret. But it's the old quality acts, and like, it was just, it is like a drug, and more than anybody, you're like a rented of comedy, but you look a bit like an old Hugh McGregor, actually. He's only ever told you that, so
It's something like...
A lot more like Chewbacca that's been shown back in the Ewan McGregor film. So, anyway, I told you we need a safe word. I'll start going off on tangents.
It's fine. It's absolutely fine. I mean, it's something for me. It's something like over 750 comedians in 45 years. And that will rise. I think by the time I've put them all on my blog, it'll be over 1,000.
So
it's mad, but it is a drug, like you say. Can you tell me about your first ever gig?
Well, funny enough, it's like next week is going to be like an anniversary. I'm showing my comedy age now. It's embarrassing considering my level of... So I did my first gig like a certain amount of years ago. I think it was the 10th or the 11th of January or something like that. So it was a Thursday night. So I think it was about 2002.
Right.
So well, long story. I was trying to read because I have an argument with a friend. He reckons it was 2001, but I was 30. It was so I sort of in my mid 20s. I fell in love with comedy. Would go. So I used to go to to all the BBC recordings. I'd get free tickets to Al Murray TV show, free ticket to Frank Skinner, you know, I'm sure you know of them.
Exactly, yeah.
And the short, follow, stuff like that. And then, so as a punter, and then I went to one of my first Edinburgh previews to see Ed Byrne.
Right.
And, at the Amuse Moose in a little pub, The Crown and Two Gentlemen. And, I'd never heard of Edinburgh. So I think that year that I moved to London, I did go up to Edinburgh. So it must be about then, 96 or something like that, 97.
Yeah.
And a friend was going up, do you want to come to Edinburgh Festival? And I was like, what's Edinburgh Festival? I didn't know what it was. So, you know, I'd only been to a comedy. So we went and had a wicked time. And then that was all part of the, that's like the mother load of drugs if you're a comedy addict.
Tell me about it.
But I was still like a punter. And I just... So the Amuse Moose, you probably know this. They, funny enough, I was looking on their website trying to, and Hills actually sent me a birthday WhatsApp randomly.
Wow.
Really is. So I'm on the hit list. Not pretty enough for her, but yeah.
I went to a writing course for my blog, and it was run by her. And I'd this is Hills Jago, who owns Amuse Moose. I'd never met her. And after I'd done my course, it was just a half day thing. I was then invited to the Amuse Moose Best New Act, and it was at Edinburgh. And I thought, this is fantastic. And Maisie Adam was on the bill. And Ian Smith compared it, and I thought, this is great. This is really good. That's what I love about Edinburgh. It's like you just don't know who you're going to get, and the surprise guests and all the rest of it. Yeah.
I did a writing course through the Moose that Robin Ince thing. I mean, I'm really shit at writing, which is why I'm a failed comedian. That's why I compare a lot, because I just like being in the moment. I'm lazy, and I'm like, it's hard to sit down and write funny stuff, but sometimes you just ad lib and riff and just prat around. I'm just a bloody buffoon, aren't I? So
you put yourself down, my friend.
I think I've written about two or three good jokes in my 19 years. But none of them have been some of them have been topical, or they've been... I've had my moments, but I'm not, not had a breakthrough, because I've been at the right place, or just because I'm... But, I've enjoyed the journey, mostly. So I used to do the door. So basically the Moose, as you know, once you're on their email list, you're on their email list for life. You cannot unsubscribe to the Amuse Moose email list. That's a fact.
No. she keeps sending emails.
They would recruit from their email list for people to help out do the door and set up the room and do the sound check, set out the chairs, all the unglamorous behind the scenes. Bullshit, which basically I do myself at most of my gigs. I'm self-trained. I'm a jack of all trades. So funny enough. So apparently, Nick Helm used to do it as well.
I
didn't know that, actually, and Rob Beckett.
Yeah.
Me and Rod Gilbert were on that. We were on the Moose crew, so we knew each other socially, and then from meeting up at the Moose and seeing different, Frank Skinner used to come down and do his new stuff there, and I saw him do some it was great.
Brilliant.
A comedy gig to see that rawness of trying stuff out on a Thursday, then he'd record it on a Friday, then it'd be on TV on there. Saturday or Sunday or whatever, sort of like a live topical stuff. And, you know, inevitably some stuff would bomb and, you know,
but it was nice to
see these big stars. Yeah, when I did this course with the Moose, like Ricky Gervais was one of the guests, actually.
Wow.
And something that he said, which totally rings true, is that I wish we just did this casual little course, like, you know, just chatted about, and this was when The Office was maybe out.
Yeah.
But not such a big hit as it is. And he said, like, the funniest person you know isn't a comedian. It's a real person. It's like your dad or your best mate, yeah, or your sister or your auntie or your gran or your cousin or something like that.
It's very true, yeah.
And it is totally true if you think about it. It's like, because, and that's why it's stand-up is so hard or can be hard, if, because you've got to replicate, like, you know, your brother, whether, like, you saw him at Christmas, you might just, like, say one little word or he'll look at you a certain way and that's funny to you because you've got that years of
connection. Yeah.
Whereas, like, a complete stranger to replicate that in seconds, you know, it's an impossible task sometimes. But, well, it depends on the audience, because you're a lovely audience member, but some people are a bit, they it's almost like they go there not to have fun. You have to look metaphorically give them a slap and say, come on, line up, we're only in this. And this is totally true in these Zoom gigs and stuff. This is why I don't pick on people. I hate it, because I've been picked on. I mean, I saw, like, Jimmy Carr, like, years ago.
Yeah.
Like, four times in the same week, not by design or a plan. I think I'd been to see, like, the Frank Skinner show, and he was doing the warm-up for it, and he picked on me, you know, for, like, a set.
Oh, no.
And then, he's not nasty. He's just trying to set up for a joke, isn't he? Like, you know, I wasn't that offended by it and stuff, and it wasn't, you know, it was just something about being a big guy, and I was offended that he called me a sun reader or something like that. Can't remember the joke. And then I think on the Thursday I must have gone to some another gig and he was on there and popped in to do, and then I went to Brixton Comedy Club and then he popped in there, and it was like, right. So three or four times I saw him in the space of a week, and I think twice he actually used me, because I'd always sit in the front, like, yeah, when I was a fan, like, you know, because I'm a big music fan, it's like sitting in the mosh pit and stuff.
So, to
answer your question,
it's fine.
Is that the end? So I used to volunteer to do the Moose thing, and you'd get paid £5 for your travel card or a few drinks, and, you know, you get to see some amazing comedy for free. And
I
remember, like, once, because I was on the door, like, once you're a member of that club, you'd like go to see, like, Bill Bailey do, like, an Edinburgh preview, and I had some friends in town, and, like, it was sold out, but we managed to get in, you know, I got free and they paid, it was a tenner, and then my mate went to the toilet, and now it's similar again, but he it was Bill Bailey doing Edinburgh preview. My mate come back with a big smile. He goes, "Oh, guess who I've just bumped in?" So Ricky Gervais popped in, just done 10 minutes. And
wow.
Stuff. And, you know, there's loads of little moments, but sounds like a big enough thing. But yeah,
that's what it is, though. I was just going to say, it's wonderful watching unknowns then blossom.
It's
fantastic.
I got a free ticket. I was Bill Bailey's roadie. I had to carry.
Look at him now, and look at you now.
And we had to carry, like, his keyboard up to his car.
Brilliant. I first saw the Rubber Bishops with him in.
He
was fantastic then. You could see how good he was going to be.
But this was, like, a really steep, like, basement in Soho.
Right.
And, like, I don't know, this keyboard, I'm, like, visualising it's worth a few grand. And I'm, like, had a few beers, and I'm, like, oh, shit. And actually, Bill Bailey, I saw, he's a classic. I used to do a joke about Bill Bailey because I saw him at the 100 Club.
Yeah, yeah.
As a punter, like, maybe when I first started doing gigs. And what I was surprised about is that I bumped into him in the toilets before.
Right.
There's a collective theme here, isn't there? That's how you get your way to the top. I used to tell this as a... And I was quite shocked that he was quite nervous, and I used to tell this as a joke, and it was because I stole this technique off him for my first few gigs, because I used to get quite nervous, to a certain extent. And he was staring into the mirror, banging his fist down on the hot and top cold taps, going, "Come on, you fucker!" Like,
wow.
And I was like, oh my God, you don't think of Bill Bailey getting...
No.
But I guess some big stars, they used to do in theatres where... it's just black and they can't see the audience. And at the 100 Club, you're literally, you know, falling. It's a weird long stage and you're literally on top of them. So he was a bit maybe intimidated, where for me as a newish actor, but even so now when I've done bigger gigs to a few hundred or a thousand at festivals, it's like, whoa, you know, how do I connect with this crowd?
Yeah, it's so big.
But for big stars like him, going backwards to the small rooms, which, you know, that happens all the time, is a different. Some acts can adapt to both, but some acts are more comfortable in theatres. And so, yeah, I did the Amusemist course, the very first one.
Wow.
I was bottom of the class, so, like, you know, so Rod was on before me, and obviously...
But Craig, it's all David, experience, you know, it's a cracking starting ground, because everybody...
Yeah, but the courses, you can't really teach comedy, but you can, you know, there's little... And Logan, the guy who taught you, was taught you to be, like... It wasn't like, I know some comedy courses, that's why I'm shit at writing jokes. There's no, Logan never taught you that. He just taught you to tap into your innie, you know, with a bit, you know, not like a De Gaulier clown school, but there was elements of, you know, of drama school stuff, which I'd never done. I'd never performed in school, and I'd never, you know, I'd been a wise man in the nativity, whatever. I'd never done drama or anything in school. So my first gig, and actually I was really nervous because, when I was living in Australia, I was just working like a temp in this office, and I went to lunch, and in this like big open plan food court, it was St. Paddy's Day.
Right.
And obviously they go mad for that in Australia.
Yeah.
And they were giving away like free drinks, like some Paddy's whiskey, I think it was, or Carol Am, which is some Bailey's type stuff. You know, and I was like this, like freeloaded backpack, and I was like free drinks, but you had to get up and tell a joke. This like open plan food court, and there was about 100 people, and I was with this Irish girl and this Aussie Chinese girl, and they were like, "Go on, get up there," because they knew I was a bit of an office joker, and I was like, "No, I'm not doing that." And then they're like, "Oh, so you got a free sample. But if you got up and told a joke, you got a free bottle." And
wow, it was like, what an incentive.
because it was an imported like brand as well, it was like twice as much as the normal. But that kind of added value to it. And I was like, oh, yeah. And nobody was doing it. And then I got a bit angry because I was like, because they were all like these like, you know, suits and stuff. And I was like, so I got up and told this joke. And like, I can't remember what. Oh, yeah, it was like a really... It was a classic, you know, shit Irish joke. Like, how do you confuse an Irishman? Tell him to piss in the corner. And then the compere guy who was running, the host, because nobody was really, he sort of like sanitized my joke, which is a bit ironic for an alcohol product. And he took, like, he was very like, you know, like Troy McClure out of The Simpsons.
Yeah.
He's like this smarmy TV presenter in a suit. And he's like, oh, ladies and gentlemen, we rephrase it in an Aussie accent, like, oh, put him in a circular room and tell him to urinate in the corner.
Here's your bottle.
and then what happened? I got this, like, I got a bit of bravado.
Yeah.
Maybe I had a couple of these shots. And because I was a bit angry, because, like, all these people were, like, weren't paying attention. I was like, tell a joke, guys, just get a free bottle.
Yeah.
And so I started telling a longer joke.
Wow.
And when I told the joke, nobody was watching, but it's like that thing of having eyes on you.
And
because I'd sort of grabbed some attention and something had happened and people just innocently eating their lunch, they sort of looked up and like were, there was about 100 all spread out in this food court thing, but there was probably about 40 or 50 people started watching. And then all of a sudden, I blanked. I did the Norman Collier thing.
With the microphone.
I finished the joke, but I was like, I couldn't process it. My brain was like, I was saying like, tell the mouth to speak. And then my hand got like, with the mic, got the shakes really bad.
Oh no.
I remember actually, I almost had like an out of body experience.
Oh man.
Well, like the blanking down, it's shit. And like, it was, my hand was literally going like this. Like, you know, quite substantially shaking.
Yeah.
And I remember like having an out of body and like hand, what the fuck are you doing? It was almost like it's because of the nerves or something, like the adrenaline.
Yeah, it will be.
So that was like, you know, years ago. And then on my first gig, I was so nervous that something like that would happen.
Wow.
And it didn't, you know, I stormed it, didn't I? But
well, it is. I mean, it is the heart.
And like, you know, because the energy, the adrenaline kicks in. So like there was quite a big, you know, that was the first course, like Greg Davis was on it, I think.
Right.
And so I was the last on. Rod Gilbert was on before me, and And like, I was like so nervous. He did great. And then he just whispered to me backstage, just be yourself. And then it kind of like, you know, just simple things like that kind of ground you.
From
and
there.
Like, you know, it's like, so yeah, that was a long time ago. So it's the anniversary is next week. So you should have done it next week, mate. You fucking
idiot. That is fantastic. happy anniversary. That is a wonderful story. I wanted to move on about how did Collywobbles come about then? How did that start?
I got into running gigs because I ended up, a lot of people in the industry are very driven and like got ambition. I don't know if it's a Welsh thing or a me thing or whatever, but I don't know. Well, you know, Rob didn't want to be successful, but he did because he had talent and stuff, and he had the sexy Welsh accent. I've not got it, and I've not got the hair. I had quite a shitty day job that I didn't really like, and I just sort of did it for money just to pay the bills and to do, you know, doing comedy as a hobby on the side and stuff. Yeah. So, and then I got involved in the Laughing Horse early doors.
Right.
So I was like a resident, a host there, and then so I learned stuff like running little gigs for them, and they're like quite, you know, Alex is a really nice guy, like cottage industry, and now like run the Free Festival.
Yeah.
And then like I had the Clapham comedy that you went to.
Yeah, yeah.
That used to be run by Dave Griffiths, who's King Canutes.
Yeah. Right.
An amazing story. I don't know if you saw the show at Edinburgh, and there's a film of it on Amazon actually of his t-shirts of CNUT, you know. So yeah. he wanted to focus on that t-shirt thing. And he was moving out of London, and he passed on the Clapham comedy to me, which I'd done as a punter, and like I'd done as a new act, and like, you know, I did it with like Michael McIntyre when Dave ran it in a little pub in Clapham and other people. So I took on that his was weekly, but it was just I just do it as monthly, and you know, it wasn't really money thing. It was just like to keep that brand up and, you know, to run a really nice gig. And over the years, I've had, you know, Josh Willey come down there, Mickey Flanagan, Stephen Merchant.
You get the acts, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, I had like a quite a good reputation, and then that kind of moved on different venue. But then the Collywobblers thing, your nemesis, you'll have to meet him, Sean Puppy, he's called Sean Thobert. He's this little Geordie guy that I met years ago, and he. You should interview him. He'll be like Alien versus Predator. He's not as laughy.
I will do. I'll try and get him.
he's like the bad cop to your good cop. He's a nice guy. We've become friends. He was an audience member that we met.
Yeah.
We used to run a gig at the Garage with like my friend Clara.
Yeah.
In the minibar there and stuff. And so Sean used to come and take notes, and he would like score people out of 10.
Right.
And he'd have a system of humour based on the American spell of humour. So H, would he pay to see them headline? U for uniqueness, M for material, O for, I can't remember what the O was for, and then I was for risk. I scored quite highly in risk because I saw him with a notepad and I just ripped into him and said, what are you doing? You know, we're not numbers. You know, can we not bleed and all that sort of stuff? So he lived in Welling Garden City.
Right.
And so he wanted to put on like a few gigs there, and then we did a charity gig, and it was in this sports venue that had a room called the Collingwood Suite.
Ah, see.
So he actually designed that logo, and he just come up with a name, you know, because like, you know, the Amused Moose, the Laughing Horse, a lot of them, or you're either like called like Clapham, you know, it's hard to get a unique sort of name in comedy, and then that kind of come organically from that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not the greatest name. It is what it is. But he just...
It's great. So then, it's
that
really
was
good.
That happened by accident. It wasn't like, you know, an advertising. But it's not like, you know, but it comes because it was in the Collingwood Suite. And then, I didn't, and Sean actually did that little puppy. He designed that.
Wow, yeah.
Because his nickname was the Comedy Puppy.
Right.
And he called me the Guru because we went up to Edinburgh together because I wasn't going to go to Edinburgh. And then I'd kind of like, because I love and hate Edinburgh. It's like, it's amazing, but it's a fucking pain in the ass, isn't it? So, and I've been so many times, like I'd been as a punter about 10 years, and I'd been like as an artist about, when I say an artist, I've done a few little shows, but I've not really done like two-handers and stuff with that, or three-handers, like little, I did a show called The Good, The Bad and The Cuddly, like the silly one.
Brilliant,
Yeah, with Carl Donnelly and Chris Martin, and then I did the Good, the Bad, the Cuddly ride again the next year. With like Henry Packer and Henry did. Yeah, so there's some. This is all like, you know, it's all public knowledge, but I'm just make me sound more of a loser than I am. No. No,
you're not a loser, my friend, at all.
I don't grow up winners, so yeah, I'm a very anti-hero.
So, yeah. My next question, you've partly answered. What to date? What has been your best comedy gig, and what has been your worst comedy gig?
They're all good.
Of course.
No, I've had some amazing ones, just some little ones, and like. But it's the memorable ones, isn't it? It's yeah. Like, I don't know, I need to write it down. It's going in my book, not yours, Richard.
Well, I hope to get a book.
No, I'm a very open, honest person. That's why I said you need a safe book, because I've got no book. I'll just talk until you like start stabbing yourself in the eyes.
Yeah, yeah. But,
I don't know. It's a big question, because I think that I remember one gig where I was, I've had like a few, oh yeah, talking about anniversary. So I did that gig. I don't know if you come on Saturday the 19th. And I did mean to tell the story, but it was quite a hectic night. This is on Zoom last year.
Yeah.
Just gone. So I did, I guess it's got to be up there, the worst ones. there was one gig where I died spectacularly because I'd gone to see Radio. My mate, who was a big Radiohead fan, and
right.
He convinced me. And I think London had massively sold out. They were playing Shepherd's Bush Empire, like small gigs for them. And he managed to get some tickets to Manchester on a Thursday. And he didn't drive, and I did. And we drove up to Manchester and back from London in the day. I had about 2 hours sleep, went to work, and then did a gig on the Friday evening. And I'd underestimated how tired I was. And I literally almost fell asleep like halfway through.
Oh, mate.
And, like, you know, to remember your jokes and to deliver them, you need some sort of energy. And
yeah.
That was a particularly horrible gig that I remember. And then the Saturday, I got punched on stage, almost got punched on stage.
Mate.
Not quite Jim Jefferies, but it's quite a funny story. That's why, in hindsight, I can't remember it. I did reincorporate the story as a little, gig story in my set. By this was like years ago, and it was so that happened on the Saturday the 19th, so that's why. So I guess it's been 7 years or 8 years since, because that was a Saturday the 19th as well, and it was a Saturday before Christmas. And you probably know, and from going to gigs and from speaking to comedians, Christmas gigs in the old world could be, I mean, on Zoom you're kind of safe, nobody can punch you on Zoom. You can't get COVID.
Believe me, yeah.
But I'll try. I'll have a go. And this guy, it was, I was comparing, because like, I kind of, I haven't really done a set for ages because I run my own gigs and I compare
a
lot.
Yeah.
And I've got a really strange memory. Like, it's very, I've got an amazing memory, but I can't control it. It's like a superpower, but it's, you know, I'm like a really shit superhero. I want to use it, it just comes out. And you know, I can remember stuff from years ago, and I can remember details, like, you know, that people are like, how the fuck do you remember that? And I'm like, I don't really know, I just do. I'm like a bit aspergic or something, I'm not sure what it is, but or ADHD or all the, I don't know, I've got some sort of illness, but I'm not diagnosed. I'm not a doctor. Are you a doctor?
No. Sorry. not at all.
So, just look like one.
I work on a reception in a school.
So
it's so thrilling. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I almost got pissed on stage, and it was quite traumatic. It was because it was in this club in Bromley, in the Churchill Theatre. So they're in like the function room, and there was about 70 or 80 people in, and there was two big groups. I remember a group of 14, and then a group of about 10 or 12, and then all the others were like twos and fours and sixes, you know, smaller groups. And the biggest group, they were all quite passive and quiet, and the other group were the opposite and were massive, you know, they were bricklayers, they said. And they were like, the gig started at 9, they'd been drinking all day.
Wonderful.
They'd been doing some like coke. And I slammed the ringleader. and he stormed the stage because they fucking up the gig. They were like getting up and walking around.
Yeah.
And the first act that do like, sorry, just burped. The first act. You can edit that out, right? So, make it louder for comedy. So the gig. The first act was like this really nice Nick Redo. He's like a Kiwi storytelling guy.
He
was good. He wasn't like super punchy gags, but he had some, you know, he had a nice routine.
Yeah.
But just no act would have shone really unless you're like Jeff Edison or Bob Mills or somebody who would like dominate, or Ian Cognito who would have fucked them up. And I tried to get him settled, but as best I could. But then they just like ruined his gig. And then in the middle section, that's when I ripped into them and I like, the ringleader. Yeah, it's a funny story, but it's going in my book, so I've got a copyright. I'll give it to you as a Christmas present.
Fine. No,
but, it's not that good. I'm looking it up. No, but what was the ringleader? I need to write it down really, because I can't remember the sequence of events because it was all quite traumatic. But what he said something about who are you then? Are you a bricklayer? He heckled, and I said, who are you then? Yeah, what's your name? What do you do? And he goes, oh, you were bricky as well. And he went, actually, I'm a property developer. And I was like, oh, and I went, oh, you can count more than two bricks. And then he went, and then he said something like, so long ago, I can't remember, but he said, actually, I'm a very successful property developer, unlike you, who's not a very successful comedian. And as much as I knew the gig wasn't going well, and the audience have got out of like faith in you, and I knew they didn't really have faith in, they liked me a little bit, but they didn't because, you know, the gig was like very fragile. But I knew like in my comedy instinct that they hated these cunts more than they liked me. So I went, oh, let's ask the audience then. Do you think I'm a successful comedian? And, you know, the majority of them cheered. And do you think I'm not a successful comedian? And like, you know, nobody cheered or like, you know, maybe that. And I went, there you go, mate. They think I'm a successful comedian and they all think you're a massive cunt. It wasn't then that he stormed the stage. And then I think something else happened or another act come on. And then I think I did a bit of routine about being from Wales. And I've some of my, that's not a comedy. You want to like heckles about being Welsh or the Welsh English banter. It's like, it's, you know, it's a classic, isn't it? It's like, I used to reread scenes about that, but, and he did the sheep noise.
Yes.
And then I said, I only shag the ones that look like your mum. and then he said, you've gone too far now. And then I said, that's what your mum said. It was all in the moment. And it was then that he stormed the stage. And this room was like, it was a function room, and it was like behind the back. It did have a green room, which was the backstage, which was where they kept all the ice creams for the main theatre.
It
wasn't like a fancy green, it was like a little office. And so Ian Lee had done it once, and apparently he's a bit of a maverick, and he'd gone in and picked up all these ice creams, you know, like the posh ice creams you get in the theatre, because in the Churchill. And he'd gone and thrown them all out, and then the promoter had got walloped with a £72 bill for the ice cream they'd given away.
That's like brilliant.
£2.50 a pop. So I did think of running in there and hiding. But I didn't even know if there was a door, but I was like, you know, I'm a big guy, but I'm a lover, not a fighter, isn't it? And like, I didn't, you know, but I'm not a coward as such. But I'm not, I just don't like confrontation and stuff. So
that's brilliant. So that's a great story, though.
Yeah, but I remember it all happened so quickly, and he got to the stage and he had like proper red mist and stuff, and he was like, say you're sorry. And he was like, and I said, I'm sorry, mate, it's only a joke. I was so tempted to say, do another little tagline. I kind of knew the line in the sand. If I'd have said something else, he would definitely punch me, right?
Yeah.
And then I was like, I had the mic stand here, and I was thinking some sort of Daniel San blocking it with the mic or something. I did literally, you know, like your life flashes before you, like, you know, in moments of distress. And I did actually have a flash forward to Christmas Day, and I was like, you know, obviously I love my food. I was like, oh, this is going to be the worst. I had a vision of me eating Christmas with a broken jaw. And I was like, eating Christmas dinner. I was like, oh, this is going to be the worst Christmas ever.
Oh,
and I was
mate.
Like, It all happened so quickly. And his friends sort of dragged him off. And then, yeah, and there was no real security. There was just a guy who ran the gig and his wife. And then this lady ran like the bar in the room. And they sort of got dragged out and stuff. And then as they were, yeah, oh yeah, the scary bit was, as they were being dragged out, I didn't find out till after, but they shouted, "I'm going to hunt you down and your family."
No. And oh, the weird thing was,
that was on the Saturday the 19th, and then like the Tuesday the 21st or whatever it was, I went out with some comedy friends to the Roadhouse in on a comedy night out in Covent Garden.
Right.
And they had like Rocky Oki on, and one of the comedian mate was up singing Tainted Love or something, and then with this band, you know, they do like karaoke with a live band, and then this guy come and nudged me in the mosh pit, and he was like, "Oh, you're not comparing this tonight. You're not on stage tonight." And I was like, "Oh, well, where have you seen me?" He goes, "Oh, I saw you at Bromley Comedy." And I was like, "Oh shit!" This guy had seen me like 6 months before. It was so random. And but yeah, the funny part of the story was, you know, it obviously wasn't funny at the time. So there was a real, you know, like there can be, you know, the tension. It can be a positive.
Yeah. Vibe,
but when something like that happens, there's a, like, you know, a tangible tension in the room and stuff.
Very much so.
And I seriously didn't know what to do. And I just, like, you know, kind of looked into my heart. I closed my eyes. And I actually did this. And it worked beautifully just by accident. It wasn't, you know, you can't plan for things like that. It wasn't a plan, for fuck's sake. And then I just closed my eyes. And I just went, "We wish you were here." And everybody started singing. And it was like, you know.
Brilliant.
It was the right thing to do, to try and put a gig. And
then, like, Zoe Lyons was on,
and then, yeah, she was great. You know,
that is brilliant.
Anyway, so
that is so good.
I'm glad he's short stories, Rich.
It's fine.
Ask some short
this
questions.
This is great. This is great. The next question is, do you prefer comparing to delivering a routine?
Yeah. Like I said, because I was never like, like when I first started, I did have some sort of set thing about my memory. I'd always like, and I'd always fluff stuff up. So, and like talking about the best gigs, yeah. So I've done like, yeah, I didn't really answer that question. Focused on the negative, innit?
No, carry on.
Some of the best gigs I've had as a comedian is when I've like, you know, I've gone off script and stuff, and you know, like I think we talked before, like I. Like, love that Ross Noble was one of my heroes that I sort of, you know, I'm like Kitson, and you know, I like scripted people as well, I mean, well crafted jokes and stuff, but I like, and I know Ross is kind of like, you know, semi scripted or whatever, but a lot of it is, but so as a punter, I used to like, you know, the unpredictable things and stuff like that, and so I've had some of my best gigs where I've riffed off the crowd and gone with it and stuff, and you know, there's a risk in that, and it obviously doesn't always work and stuff. And even when I was like writing jokes, mine were kind of in a where they bouncing off the audience, sort of like the jokes that bounced off the audience.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, that can backfire if the audience is a bit flat and they're not giving you anything to work with. Then you're kind of a bit screwed and stuff. That's where I've kind of had average gigs and stuff. So yeah, I mean, I was like, I haven't done a set for ages, and it's like, you know, I never. It's because I had this like really. Demanded day job, and I never really had time to write, and I'd always try and set myself time, but then it'd be just life, and like you know, I'm not very disciplined basically, and I kind of, that's why I prefer the freedom of comparing, and like you can, and then later seeing people like Russell Hicks, who's like, you know, phenomenal, and you know, I wish I was as good as him, and I did a gig with Russell when I met him, like, you know, I was comparing, he was like, "Oh, that was really good riff, mate." And I was like, that made me feel great that somebody of his caliber. And actually, the story about Ross, actually, I did my first comparing gig with this, where Angel Comedy used to be. I don't know, it was used to be called the Brew House.
Right.
I don't know if you know that, the Comedy Brew House. And they used to, it was just like, it was like a £5 gig. It was like a laughing horse type gig, like some established acts and newer acts. It was on a Saturday, a lot of newer act supports, and then an established sort of headliner, and kind of very like rough and ready, like not quite open mic, but like a little bit above an open mic. And but they used to have a lot of new acts on, And I turned up on the Saturday there, and I was like, oh, the compere's not turned up. Do you want a compere? And I was like, well, no, because the compere's got to go on first, right? And it's like to a cold room, and like it could be a beautiful room, but it could be a tough room and stuff. And I was like, no, I'm going to do that. It's 20 quid. I was like, I'll do it. So I did that, and it went really well the first time. I think the second time didn't go down quite so well, just maybe. And then the third time, it's like, you know. And then the next night, actually, I was doing the door at the Amuse Booth, and it was the bit like what you said, it was like the BBC New Act.
Yeah.
And Ross was comparing it.
Right.
And I met him before doing my gig, and I told him, like, I'm such an ass. Like, I was like, I'm doing this because of you. I want to be your mate. And like, flaring, you know, just being honest, really. But,
yeah.
And then I was like, oh, I'm gutted. Like, I did my first comparing gig last night, and now I'm learning from the master and all this. You know, it's the wrong way around. I've sort of saw you last night and then done the gig, you know, and learned from watching you and how you were. And the Hills' daughter used to go out with Ross, actually.
Right.
And she turned up that night and with a new boyfriend, and they, after her and Ross had split up, and they were like, I was like, are you a bit nervous about, you know, your sort of semi-famous boyfriend and, you know, and your new boyfriend and that than me? And she went, no, I'm more nervous about him meeting my mum.
Brilliant.
It's only because she's messaged me today, randomly, out of the blue.
Brilliant, though. What is great, what I can say about that is that I've only been going to see you for about the last 2 or 3 months. I've only just got round to doing it. And you make it look absolutely effortless comparing. You really do. You're such a warm character on stage that you just bring everybody in. And it works like a treat every time I see you.
Well, thanks, that's very kind. Well, it's a lot of practice, isn't it? I've been doing it for a while. But it's because I care, you know. I care about the acts. I care about the audience. And, like, I'm so obsessive. Like, when I set up, I mean, you probably didn't notice a little bit, but, like, I mean, the good thing about doing stuff at the Zoom, like, I don't, I mean, even though it's shit, even with this bad back, you know, I set up the chairs a certain way.
And
Well, no, you've seen it different because you saw it with social distancing, which is a minefield again. But like, but like, I'm obsessive about moving the furniture around So I did, when I did my first gig on a Thursday, the next night was the opening night of Covent Garden Comedy Club.
Right.
Neil Kinsella.
Back
on. So I was friends with Neil and stuff from like going to the Monday Club, which Christian Knowles runs and stuff. Neil was a new act then, and then he used to work. So he had this idea of opening up a club in Covent Garden. It was in a tiny little pub in which is now a clothes shop called the Essex Serpent on King Street. And in the middle of Covent Garden, like tiny. And so Neil had put me to help him out do the door and stuff. And that was like, and I was buzzing after my gig. I'd had about 2 hours sleep. I'd gone to work I was high for about 2 days after my first. And I got, I think I went out, we all went out after, and like in Soho, and people bought champagne, but I think I had like one beer, and I didn't, you know.
That was it.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I didn't need it, because I knew, I was like, I felt like I was, my, you know, my, I could feel I was, the adrenaline, I don't
of
know.
Of course, what yeah.
And then I did get, you know, even with natural highs, you pay a price. You did, I on the. On the Saturday night, I think I hit a low. I like, but yeah. So the point is, after my first gig, I helped Neil with that, and Neil is obsessive about tables because this was a tidy.
Yeah.
So me and Kevin Shepherd, I don't know if you know Kevin.
I've heard of him. Yeah.
We were helping him on the door and setting up the room, and so because it was only a little pub, yeah, we got all the tables out and just had it all theatre style to fit. You know, to fit as many people in as possible. And yeah, we had some cracking nights there. Like Gary Lane, he used to do it quite often, Steve Williams. And
brilliant, yeah, great names.
And people like that. So yeah, we'd get this table and we'd get it up like this tiny. So doing comedy gigs, you see a lot of pub basements and a lot of pub, you know, weird spaces that a normal punter wouldn't see in the pub, you know, like. And so we had to carry this like massive table up this corridor that wouldn't fit the table, and you have to turn it. It's like being a removal man. So I'm obsessive about like stuff like that, because, you know,
well, you want to get it right, though, don't you? You've got to get it right, because you're giving it your best shot.
That's why, you know, it makes a difference. It only makes, so moving a bit of furniture might make the gig 3% better, but yeah, that 3% better could be the magic degree that
makes it
the room more playable. It's so obsessive detail, I know, but I think it makes a difference, and I care about those details. Like, I care about the audience. I care about them being relaxed. That's why in Zoom, especially, I try and translate that, because I want them to have a good time. I don't want them to passively enjoy it.
No.
I want them to fucking be in it. And because it's best. Like, somebody emailed me and say, oh, is the recording of it? And I was like, no, it's like the best gigs are enjoyed in the moment. That's why it's live, isn't it? It's like, you know, that's where comedy, and that's why, you know, the old classic of you have to be there, wherever you're trying to explain.
The magic of anything happening when it's live.
Yeah. And obviously you can see some cracking, like crafted type, you know, Edinburgh stuff, or like a story themed show is great and stuff. But, you know, I remember seeing like Kitzman and, I can't even talk. Kitson and Andy Zaltzman. Kitson,
brilliant. Daniel Kitson, yeah, he's brilliant.
Yeah, and it was at this little club in West London, our friend run, called Amazing Titters, and Zaltzman was great, but like, I can't remember exactly what happened. Somebody fell off a chair, I can't remember, and then Kitson riffed on it, and then he went, look, and he got bigger laughs. He said, see, you've got jokes, but either happening, and it was like, I can't remember the exact word, but it was like, you know, it was like a moment that happened in that gig that, you know, you try and retell it in the cold light of day and it's not funny, it doesn't make sense. But in that magical moment, it was like the, you know, so I like, but I'm a weirdo in, like, you know, I'm even weirder than you, Rich.
You're not a weirdo. We're not weird at all.
I like all types of comedy, and it's like a spectrum from, like, you know, one-liners to, like, whimsy to clown to filth to... I appreciate all types. And obviously I've got personal preferences, but whereas, like, some people, like, you know, don't like one-liners, or they don't like stories, or they don't like, you know, so
wow, that is amazing. What ambitions, if any, what other ambitions do you have as a comedian? Have you got any?
To earn more money, mate. I've got to do my tax return. It's going to be zero.
Yeah.
I know that's a comedy little joke that's well trodden the last 2 years, but it's I don't know. I just like to I just love, like, the magic of it, and bringing people together and connecting with people. And you know, that's why, you know, doing, like you say, the lockdown, like doing these Zoom gigs. Like, you know, I've got. Yeah, well, I think you went to that one night. I was like buzzing there. Like, Russell Kane was on.
Yeah.
But that wasn't because of the acts. That was because of people like you, and that's what I almost feel like I'm on a pilgrimage to convince audiences that they are just as important as the acts.
Very much so. Yeah, I don't know that,
and, like, so it makes me quite angry where audiences are apathetic. And. And the old cliche is, like, if you go outside of London, then the audiences are nicer, which is generally quite true and stuff. And I think that's where I had, a really cracking gig, this gig in Guildford, where I just ad-libbed and, like, riffed off the audience and stuff. Whereas, you know, it's different, all gigs are different. I've had some amazing gigs in London as well, but that's like a generalisation of thing. But it's just when audiences are a bit more, you know, make me laugh, or, like, the analogy that I always do is, like the in 12 Angry Men, you know.
Yeah.
Audiences are, like, up for a laugh, like people like you, lovely people like you, and then people who are like, make me laugh.
Yeah.
So in a little bit like the 12 Angry Men thing, like the innocent and guilty, it's almost you have to convince the, you know, you have to change the people who are like, make me laugh.
Into
up for a laugh. And the irony is, sometimes you do it, you know, you don't always do it, but you do it, and then the night's over, and it was like, if you'd have been up for a laugh at the start, how fucking amazing would it, you know, it's been a good night, but how amazing, and that's what I said. I mean, I'm not very ambitious, and, you know, I kind of need to be, because I need to, you know, I'm a bit skinny at the minute. I'm in negative equity, I'm living off my savings and stuff, but I need to, you know, that's not a cry for help.
Yeah.
My Ko-fi pages. think my passion is just to, you know, make the memories and stuff and
well, bring it's interesting.
That was really wanky and hippie, wasn't it?
Not at all.
Oh, but I think that's my genuine.
It's interesting what you say about audiences, because for years and years and years, I would never sit on the front row. I've always been blessed with this gift of a very loud laugh, and I thought that would be enough. But then I started sitting on the front row, and it is completely different. The atmosphere is just so much more. You just don't, as I say, you don't know what's going to happen next, and it gave me an enormous amount of confidence as well to do it, and I absolutely feel.
Yeah, some people like it annoys me when people like some nights. I mean, you've probably been to somewhere, yeah. And some of my where there's like they're low attended and like and then people sit at the back and there's like an empty front row is so that's one of my like pet hates is an empty front row and stuff because like you know if
you need
happens,
something to bounce off definitely
for well if I've done it then I'll just rip the chairs out and I'll move the stage
too right, mate.
This gig at a festival once this weird festival like a music festival with Bob Slayer. Do you know Bob Slayer? He offended some of the audience. He's like, "I like Bob. He's a maverick." And I think some band had come on the gig. It wasn't a proper. We were in the comedy tent, but it wasn't. It was like an Argos gazebo. It was like they held about 40 people, I think. And for some reason, half the audience did leave.
Right.
The band come on, like I think they had some bigger name bands like the Bob Bay Bicycle Club or something
like that.
But they didn't leave in like little drips. Literally half the audience left.
Mate,
like this little makeshift stage. So I was like, "This is fucking weird." They're all sitting down on the grass. I mean, so I jumped on that bit and turned the stage sideways because I knew they weren't going to move. And it'd be just too crazy. Literally half like 20 people. It was only I remember going. Going back to when I used to go to the Banana regularly and stuff. So, yeah, I remember like going one night and it was like, I think Tim Vine was on it. It was packed and I got there late. And the Banana, you never used to be able to pre-book, you'd have to queue up.
And
they didn't have a compare, but their compare was kind of alcohol because they'd get people in 2 hours before and people got there early just to get a good seat or get a seat. So people would be drinking solidly for 2 hours. So they'd be quite, you know, oiled up in the, you know, and merry. But I think because we got late, I was particularly busy. We just got in and then we were standing at the back. We had a good night, but like, I remember like thinking, shit, you know, if we'd have been in the front, we'd have had a, you know, you'd have had a seat a bit more comfortable.
Yeah, yeah.
Physically, because you almost get like that energy. And like, you know, as a punter, if you, you know, like going back to the drug thing, it is like taking like an ecstasy or something. It's kind of. And it's almost like you come home and then, like you're on a high
and then you suddenly have to come down from it.
Your gills are lifting. Oh, that's the name. Oh, yeah, maybe that'd be my gig to run to do like a proper, you know, to own a venue, I guess. Or like your, was it Laughing Up to the Gills or something?
Or whatever it's going to be called. Hoping one day.
Well, it's got to be with a name.
The dream would be to run a comedy club.
Yeah, that was a little random gig I did once. Just this tiny little gig in King's Cross. There was this couple in the audience who were like, it wasn't many in, like, there was, you know, good acts, like Tom Ward was on and Sarah Bannon. This couple, they were at the bar and they were like literally rubbing their cheeks because their jaws were hurting. And I was like, can I take a picture of that? I just love like seeing people like, you know, that. You know, I get a kick out of people like, you know, getting giddy and like, you know, it's flashbacks like my youth in school when you used to have like giggling fits and I think I've told you the story about I did a charity gig once at Clapham and Nish was on, Nish Kumar, although he doesn't return my calls anymore, now he's famous. Come on, Nish. and Pasco was on, Sarah does, because she's lovely. Love you, Sarah. And name dropping, but I haven't got the powers that James Gill's got. So, you know.
I'm sure he'll be pleased.
James is good. But yeah, no, but some of these people I've like done my gigs and then like, they disappear and stuff. But then some of them like Pasco. But I don't know if I told you the story. Yeah, what's the name? Was that, Joe Boat, you know, Joe Boat, Jasper.
Oh, yeah, Joe Boat, yeah.
And it was, I think it was the first time he did this character, Jasper Cromwell Jones.
Right.
It's like a very posh character, like Tim Nice, but dim. Crossed with Bear Grylls. And he, like, because it was the first time he'd done the character, he'd gone overboard and he wore like a parka, he had like a big rucksack. And it was like, I don't know what time of year, but it was quite hot in the room. And for some reason, he got the giggles and he broke out of character. And there was only like 20, 30 people in or something like that. And the audience all got the giggles as well. And it was like just a weird, I don't know what happened, I can't remember, but it was just a magical moment where like everybody, the 30 people in the room, were all like giggling like school children, basically.
Wow.
And then Joe kind of settled down. And then he tried to deliver, and then he got the giggles, and then he kind of started.
That's brilliant.
It's priceless, yeah. But it wasn't because of a joke. It was just a moment, and like, so when you know, that's why some of the smaller gigs are nice, because it's easier to connect with the audience.
Yeah,
Yeah, that might be my dream to do. You know, similar to yours, to own. You know, where you get the bar sales as well. Ka-ching.
Exactly, mate. Exactly. Like me, right, do you go to a lot of comedy gigs as a member of the audience?
I don't anymore, but like I obviously have in my time.
Yeah.
The only time I really do is up in Edinburgh, I guess.
Yeah.
Because when I go up there, I mean, I haven't done a, I think last year is the first time that I didn't like perform at Edinburgh. And when I say perform, I'm just doing like a little shitty open, but nothing, you know, because I'm not like a full-on professional. I'm not on like a big agency, or I'm just me, right? So
I'll see you in 2021 when we go.
Yeah, mate. You're a dreamer, mate.
Hopefully.
Well, I love your optimism. But yeah, that's a different subject. But so in Edinburgh, I'm trying to go to lots of plays, and you know, girlfriend loves to see, and you know, it's just. So I don't really go to a lot of other comedy gigs as such, because I see all of my own gigs and stuff, and anybody I want to see, I kind of book.
Yeah, too, right? Yeah, yeah.
I would like to, but I just haven't got the time. Yeah. I do, you know, I would go and see, you know, I've seen, you know, Billy Connolly in the past, and I go and see Kitson sort of story shows, and, you know, and I can't remember, I was a teen, you know, Soho Theatre, I've sometimes dipped in there.
Oh, it's a wonderful venue, that. It's really good.
Like that. Yeah. So, so generally, like, go and see, you know, but I don't really go to... I go and support, like, friends' comedy gigs sometimes.
Yeah. Do you have any comedians that have inspired you over the years that you've looked at them and you've thought, I'd love to have a go at doing that?
Not only like I said, like Ross, because of his improvising, but I haven't got like that level of skills. I'm just idle banter, but sometimes. Yeah. Or like, you know, just from seeing stuff when I fell in love with comedy and stuff. Yeah, yeah. I'd love to. Sometimes you see, even though I say like, I see jokes and shit, which, you know, I'm not like a gag writer, so, but obviously I can admire like a well-crafted joke or like a random example of, funny enough, it went viral over a lot, was Celia Pasquale. I don't know if you know.
The
finger ring routine. And I can see, you know, that's such, so obvious, but so clever, and like, you know, would, you know what I'm talking about, don't you, with the,
Very much so.
You call this an earring and this, a toe ring, don't call this a finger ring, and then I think she did it on the Apollo and stuff, and I was like, I can see tons of comedians thinking, shit, why didn't I think of that? And then there's obviously like lots of legends of the circuit, like Jeff Innocent, I know Jeff quite well over the years, and then like Reg D. Hunter. Seeing him Jet Reg at Edinburgh, on early doors, and like first when he wasn't so famous, but like just totally dominate late in life, and I was like really drunk, and I was like really just chatting to him after, and like I just like really blown smoke up his ass, and
I've been going to Edinburgh for 16 years, and I'm amazed I haven't come across you. The reason why I asked that last question about the comedians was that the reason I've written the blog was because of the first ones I truly loved were obviously Markham and Wise, and I loved them for a variety of reasons, that everybody would sit down on a Christmas day and watch them. And I always say that Eric Markham had another ability just to twiddle his glasses or not do anything, and there was a next level of humour, and I thought, I absolutely love this, and that's really what got me into it. So thank you very much for answering that. I've just got one more thing to ask you. Is there anything else you would like to say? Is there anything you'd like to plug, or do you want to know where people can find you or your comedy gigs?
Find me on Instagram on Sean James, where it's spelled, I don't know, is my name up here? Yeah, isn't it?
S-I-O-N.
Yeah, it's a kinky Welsh way, isn't it? Boggles. So it's my nephew's birthday tomorrow, so he sent me a birthday card, and because I call it, his name's Ryan, and I call him Rhino, like Rhino. But a running joke, one of my elderly aunties, like, so she'd send me a Christmas card with, like, spelled S-O-I-N.
Right.
And so when my little six-year-old nephew, when he sent me, they always put that on, when they put it on a card to me, just as a little running joke. So what was the question again? Sorry, I
just whatever you want to plug, your comedy gigs.
I've got my Happy Mondays gig happening at 9 o'clock.
You have indeed, and I will be there, my friend.
It isn't going out until it's edited and cleaned up into a 5-minute clip, right?
Well.
So that is on most Mondays, because sadly I've got Stuart Lee. And I think Stuart Lee would be a classic example of somebody I was like, you know, I've seen, you know, up there with Kitson of,
yeah,
you know, not, you know, totally different to, you know, Ross Noble and stuff like that. And then
Al Murray, he is a superb performer, yeah.
You know, in the character stuff. There's so many, I just love seeing, like, new, you know, people I've not heard before or something like that. A lot of my comedy peers and stuff, they all like up to American comics and stuff, where I kind of know of them, and I saw like Louis C.K. before the downfall and stuff.
Yeah.
I saw him twice when he played the Bloomsbury Theatre, and I was like, oh shit, yeah, this guy's really good and stuff, yeah. And then, loads of them rave about Bill Burr and all these American, but I kind of, there's such a wealth of comedy talent in the UK that, you know, you can't, like, and even like, you know, people like Reg, who, like, he's American, but he's one of ours, right, isn't he? Because he's been here. So there's so many like great, amazing acts, and it's like, you know, and then, you know, people like this, you know, Greg's phenomenal, and there's so many. There's so many great comics. You know, there's more great than good, right? So, and then comedy's so subjective, but that's why I say I'm a weirdo. Like, I kind of see the good in everybody and stuff.
It's not a criticism.
You're very positive, Annie.
I thought I'll tackle the blog very positively, and the reason why I've done that is that I look on it as comedy as an enthuse. To me, it's an enthuse. You go there. I always say to folk, I'm not a diarist, I'm not a critique, I'm not a reviewer. I'm a member of the audience, and I'm out to enjoy myself. And that's what you all do, and it's just magical to watch. It really is.
Yeah. No, I really like your attitude. Yeah, because, like, you know, reviewers obviously have their place and stuff. Like, but whereas I always use those who can do and those who can't review, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes.
Although, to be fair, like, some, like, I know Kate Copstick, I know she's done some. I know, like, I'm not sure if Steve Bennett's performed, but I know some of the other reviewers have had a go themselves and stuff. So. And, you know, it's just, you know, it's good to see the other side of the coin.
I had to go at the Edinburgh Fringe once, and it was terrible.
That wasn't that bad, really.
No, it was terrible. I walked out. It was a Sunday afternoon, an old folk pub, and it was a gong show. And I walked out and I said, ladies and gentlemen, I think I look like Eddie the Eagle Edwards, but I can't see the resemblance myself. And got booed off after 30 seconds.
Really?
And the guy said, have another go. So I did, and I did the same thing. Same thing happened. And I just looked at him and I said, I think I'm much better suited as a member of the audience. So never say never again. But it was just...
Well, has that been said before about Eddie the Eagle, is he?
Oh, yeah. Well, I met him when I was at college, and he said, you could have made a mint off the sun. I said, I know. Because then I really did look like him. Anyway, I digress. We've been talking for over an hour. Thank you so much.
Oh, really? Yeah. Sorry, I've even bored myself.
I've much enjoyed it, and as I say, thank you so much for your time.
Secrets.
And have a great gig tonight. I'll see you there.
Yeah. Hopefully, yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's been a bit Blue Monday today, isn't it? With the bloody and the Boris thing, and I've got this pain.
Oh,
I don't know. I've got to put my
it'll be fine. We'll be there. We'll go and do it. All right then, mate. All the best, and thank you so much for your time. Thanks a lot. All the